Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell and Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell and Pollock. We're right here in the studio ready to go for you. What's on your mind today? We're ready to talk law. This is a law talk show. 303-713-8255. 713-8255. As we do every week, you can call us and ask us a legal question on any legal subject. Even though we're injury attorneys, we're glad to do it. We do it as community service, and we're going to help you solve your problems, answer your questions. Sometimes you just need a place to go to get a simple answer, or sometimes you need to have a little legal analysis. This is where you go. 303-713-8255. 713-8255. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. We do a one-hour injury show every Saturday from 10 to 11 on 850 KOA. It's called Champions of the People Injury Show, and today we're talking about trucks, big trucks, commercial trucks, all kinds of trucks. If you're involved in a crash or an accident with a truck, you need to listen to the show. You need the information. Insurance companies have the information. They have the training. Who do you have and what do you have? Champions of the People Injury Show, every Saturday, 10 to 11, a one-hour show where we go through the details of various subjects. We've pulled back the curtain on how these insurance companies actually operate. We go behind the scenes. We educate you. At Bell & Pollock, we have a slogan. We call it, we educate and advocate. We go behind the scenes. We show you how the insurance companies try to beat your claim. And so when you have the information, it becomes very, very important for you and your family. Our website, we have all six of our books there. They're free. You can download an e-copy of our free book. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, and download it. It's that easy. If you want a hard copy, you can call our law firm. We'll be glad to send you a hard copy, or you can call the studio right here, right now, 303-713-8255, and we'll be glad to send you a hard copy of any or all of our books. Some people want them all. One person came in this week, just dropped by our law firm and got two books, and we're glad to do it. So, we have offices in Denver, and we have offices in Steamboat Springs. Right now, we're going to talk a lot to Bob from Aurora. Good morning, Bob. What can we do for you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I want to ask a couple of questions on warrants of arrest. And the first one is there a statute of limitations on warrants for arrest issued by a district attorney? And two, if there is, why don't they have a better apprehension for warrants of arrest like they do child support people that don't pay? Because someone's owed something by arresting these people, whether it be the public or, like in child support, the individual, the party that is owed money.
Okay, so you're basically looking into, number one, I mean, is there a statute of limitations?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
On warrants. And so what I'm going to say is basically, I think it's derivative of the crime, right?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know of a separate statute that places a statute of limitations on arrest warrants, but many, many crimes, many civil actions have statute of limitations. I mean, murder, there's no statute of limitation at all. So I think it would be derivative of the crime. If you've got an arrest warrant on burglary and the statute of limitations expires, then, you know, the arrest warrant arguably can not be valid. But what are the facts based on that prompts your question? Maybe I can get down to that.
Well, it's an SEC type of a warrant arrest for someone that has built an elderly person out of their life savings, basically.
I see. Well, you know, the general rule there is there's no specific statute of limitations for an arrest warrant, okay?
Okay.
I mean, but I think an argument can be made that it's derivative of the crime. You're being arrested for something,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it would be void, you know, we would say void or voidable. Those are legal lawyer words. But it's based on the premise or genesis of a some allegation of a crime.
You know, Gary, they're going to issue a subpoena. They're going to issue a warrant if it, like you said, it has to deal with the crime.
Yes.
So if they deem there's enough evidence to try the case, then they can issue a warrant.
Yeah. And there was one that was issued, and I was just wondering if, you know, like some things, I think some statutes, limitations, you have to kind of renew it. Like when you're civilly going after someone that's supposed to pay you back, and you've been given a judgment that you have to renew it after maybe 7 years or something like that?
Okay, well, judgments are different. Judgments, you can renew them, and there are statutes that cover judgments. But let's just talk about a typical example where a judge issues a bench warrant from the bench because somebody didn't show up in court, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's any statute of limitations on those because you're pulled over in 6 months, so a year and a half, and the police checks wants and warrants, and there you go, bingo.
Yeah.
You've got a warrant from you didn't show up in court, you know, a year and a half ago, and they act on it. And so I don't think there's specific statute of limitations there. But I think that a good, strong argument can be made it's derivative of the underlying crime. But no, I don't think a specific statute of limitations is available in Colorado.
Okay.
On the warrant. So okay. I think you had part two of your question. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, to apprehend these folks that have warrants and being a derivative, for people that don't pay their child support, they can just, the law can reach in, take your driver's license, this, that, and the other, whole bunch of things. But that doesn't seem to reach into some other things that seem to have maybe something that's comparable to the crime.
Right. So, I mean, that's more of a, philosophical question. Should we have a law,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's comparable to
yes.
that sort of thing? I'm not aware of any law like that.
Yeah, because I guess I'm talking about maybe in child support situations, that's more federal because it reaches through, I think, all the 50 states.
Child support is regulated by state law, okay?
Yes.
Each state has their own laws. There's questions of enforceability and enforcement, mm-hmm. which has improved a lot over the years. You're a child support order enters in Colorado, then you move to Virginia, and you think the person who has to pay child support thinks they're scot-free, and they're not. They can be collected on, it can be acted upon, and it can create a big problem for you. If you don't pay, so in the old days it was difficult to go across state lines,
right.
But in these days it's much easier.
Mm-hmm. And that's allowed through because of federal laws or states working together.
So states working together, and they have compacts and some federal law because like maybe tax returns, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
So we appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Okay, Bob. Appreciate it. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard, sorry. Brad Pollock is in a jury trial in Durango, for 2 week jury trial in Durango. He's not here today. So he finished week one this last week, and you got week two coming up. Bob Leonard is here from our law firm, Bell and Pollock. We're glad to answer your questions. 303-713-8255. 303-713-8255. Bell and Pollock. We'll be right back. You tell me it's all right. You don't mind a little pain. Good morning. Welcome back. Fasten your seatbelt. Here we go. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We'll take your calls and answer your questions on 303-713-8255, 713-8255, every Saturday at 10 to 11 on 850 KOA. We have our Champions of the People Injury Show. Today we're talking about commercial truck injuries. It's a specialty area of the law. You have to know what you're doing. If the truck is over 10,000 pounds, 10,001 pound, then the federal motor carrier safety rules can't apply. If you're hit by a delivery truck, this is a whole brand new different animal. You really need to know the rules. Your attorney needs to know the rules. What about logs? What about local deliveries? Are they exempted? What about these trucks that carry trailers? And the pickup truck by itself would not be a commercial vehicle, but the combination of them is over 10,001 pound, right? So do the rules apply then? How do you prosecute these cases? What's the new case law in Colorado? One of the new cases is called In Re Ferrer by the Colorado Supreme Court and drastically changed the law in Colorado on how you make a claim against a trucking company and the driver. So listen to our show today at 10 to 11, 850 AM KOA. We're glad to do it. It's the Champions of the People Injury Show. Right now we're going to talk to Amy from Denver. Good morning, Amy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, what can we do for you?
Okay, this is it. I don't know if I should hire an individual attorney or go with the group plan that is on the computer about faulty contaminated eye injections. And I'll start at the beginning. I won't take you through the routine when I go in once a month to get my eye injections. I'll go to the point where I'm in the chair getting ready to get the injection, all right?
All right.
They come in and they put all this adhesive inside your eye, pain medication, blah, 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 okay?
All right.
Then the associate comes in with a syringe. Oh, my, she's to my right and behind me. I can't see because my eyes are like they're glued shut with this medication that's in there. This medication's been recalled because it's contaminated. She walks out of the room. A few seconds later, the eye doctor walks in, starts talking to me, picks up this whatever syringe, I don't know, shoots it in my eye. All right, now, for the first 3 days after I have an injection done, I don't know what's going on inside my eye because I keep cold compresses on them, dark black sunglasses, and I stay in the house. On the third day, I went to call the dog in, and I noticed I could still see the bubble. When they first put the injection in your eye, you see a bubble, and I could see the bubble, but it wasn't colored. And when they shot it, it wasn't colored. It was clear, and it's usually colored like a maroon color.
Right.
And I could see the speckles of the these black dots. I can actually draw you a picture of it, of how it looks and how I see it every day. And this was last year. Anyway, so I called right away, and the nurse practitioner called me back. And she said to me, oh, no, those are floaters. So I thought, okay, you know, I don't know anything about this. So the next month I went for my eye injection, and I asked the eye doctor, and he said, yeah, she made a mistake. She didn't understand what you meant. I said, so then they're not floaters? And he kind of brushed me off. Then in January, he informed us that he was retiring and I would have another doctor. Now, every morning I have gone from 140 pounds to 107. I throw up constantly. I'm dizzy all the time because my right eye has got like a black dot in front of it, a black circle around the whole retina. I mean, I can't see out of my right eye. So my left eye was my only eye I could see out of. And now when I look at you, I can see the outline of that bubble. And I can see those little black specks in there.
Amy, when you went through this procedure, do you have any information that connects the contamination with this your situation, your condition?
All I know is that on the computer, there is a law firm that is actually advertising for clients for a lawsuit against the contamination of the medication.
Okay. All right. So here's what I'm going to tell you. So did you sign a release or an informed consent form?
I'm sure I signed releases and everything, but I didn't sign a release to be throwing up every day the rest of my life. I'm 76 years old.
Right. Okay.
And I was in good health until then.
Exactly. And what were you getting the injections for to begin with?
I have wet macular degeneration. It was to prevent blindness in my left eye.
All right. Okay, so let's talk about this a second. There are some law firms that handle mass torts or product liability cases, all right?
I didn't understand a word you said.
There are some law firms that handle what is called mass torts or product liability cases. Some deal with, and we do it, and some deal with Esure. I'm just giving you some examples. Some deal with Monsanto and the product Roundup, and some deal with this eye issue and the contamination.
Okay.
So there are different ways to look at this, but it has to be investigated. Let me give you a couple of examples, okay?
Okay.
What one is there an appropriate warning given by the product manufacturer as to what could or could not happen, number one. Number two, if there's a contamination, then there's obviously a defect in the product, and does the contamination or the contaminated agents cause the condition with the black dot and your dizziness, et cetera, and it looks like they're connected in time, so that would satisfy the first criteria. So my answer to you is this. You have a very serious situation, which I know you know. It needs to be investigated. We need to have a longer conversation off the air to see if we can help you or point you in the right direction, okay?
Okay.
So what I'm going to tell you right now is don't go.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah,
Would you be willing to take my case?
Okay, here's what we'd be willing to do. We'd be willing to talk to you and investigate it to try to help you and see if we could take your case, okay?
Okay, okay.
All right, and
so what is the law firm doing than advertising on the internet and on the television that they're looking for people to sign up?
Well, okay, so, like I was just explaining, there's law firms that do cases on Roundup or eSure birth control device, et cetera, right? Uh-huh. So this law firm is working in and specializing in this area of these eye contaminants.
Uh-huh.
That's what that means. And so they want clients like that. That might be okay. It might not be okay. All right?
Uh-huh.
And so you need to have your information given to you and be educated a little bit.
Okay, I understand what you mean. Okay, well, this is what I've done now. I have gotten I've gotten the paper from every eye injection I've had since the first day I went there. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I have that. I have who gave it, what time it was given. I have all that, and the medicine itself. I understand that this is what I understand. Now, it doesn't mean it's true. This is what I understand. The manufacturer is being sued.
Right. Go ahead. I'm so sorry.
The manufacturer of the eye injection is being sued. But I think she, the associate, oh my, there's been a call on this. I said, what? She's not, remember, she's behind me and to my right. Oh, there's been a call on this. There's a contamination in it. We have to check with your insurance if you can have the other injection.
No, wait, stop. Time out here, okay? She tells you there's a contamination, but do you have any proof or facts that the doctor or the assistant knew the recall and knew about the contamination before they administered?
Yeah, she said,
what?
She said it. My son was sitting right there in the room with me. Oh, my. There's a recall on this.
No.
Yeah, and she lays down the syringe. You can hear the syringe being laid down.
Amy, does she say there's a recall before she gives you the injection or afterwards?
Yes. Then she leaves the room to go see if my insurance will cover a different injection. The doctor comes in the room, picks up a syringe, and gives me my injection.
Anyway. After she made the comment that it was recalled or contaminated.
She must have left the syringe lay there, went to check the girl, to have the girl check my insurance. He gives me the injection out of the syringe that's laying
there. Well, there's an entire legal disconnect. I mean, she says it's contaminated. What is she calling the insurance company for authorization for? Authorization to give you more contaminated medicine?
No, because they have several different kinds.
I see. All right.
Some are more expensive than others.
But you know that you were given the injection with the contaminated medicine.
Oh, wow. I wish you could look out of my eye.
All right. I'm going to put you on hold, okay?
Okay.
Give Kevin your information. We're going to call you off the air. We're going to see if we can help you and point you in the right direction. Okay.
Okay.
So until we talk, don't do anything.
Just anybody else. No. That's why I'm using the name Amy.
Okay. Just wait till we call you, and we might get you hooked up with the appropriate people, or we might be able to help you ourselves. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I'm going to put you on hold. Give Kevin your information. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell and Pollock. We are injury attorneys. We do cases all over the state of Colorado and have for over 35 years. We formed our law firm in 1984 with a vision and mission to help injured victims and their families. Later, Brad and I decided that people come in and they don't have information. They don't know what to do, but the insurance company does. Then this show morphed and was born. People don't have information about the law, so we wanted a law talk show. And Bob Leonard has participated over the years with us, and so then we created this show as a community service. So you can call us anytime. 303-713-8255. And join us live right now on KHOW is Steve from Denver. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
I don't want to undermine your show, because I'm interested with the UPS and the FedEx stuff on the commercial deliveries. But my question, you were talking about warrants earlier.
Right.
It's an oddball warrant in Denver. It's called a GS, a General Session. And there is no statute of limitations on it. What happened, my wife and I got into it years ago. Apparently, you know, I left the scene. I didn't want to get arrested, so I left. And I guess some other guy came along and reported this. The police showed up, and they wrote out a complaint. Oh, my wife came home. She never told me about it. Well, a couple of years later, my wife died in her sleep. Then a couple of years later, I get an ID check from a cop, and he arrests me. I said, what am I getting arrested for? And he said, well, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, so I ended up, I'm down at the city, Denver City Jail, and I go to the law library, and I said, GS, what's a GS? And so I asked the public defender, she says, I said, isn't there a statute of limitation? She says, no, on a Denver has this general sessions. There is no, I said, well, how long does a general sessions warrant last? She said, it can last for 20 or 30 years. They never expire.
Right. There's no general statute of limitations. Steve, can you hold on? We got a break coming up. Can you hold on until after the break?
Okay.
All right, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. If you have a real estate question or issue, you can listen to the show that follows our show, Barry and Larry, the Consumer Real Estate Show, emphasis on consumer. You know, there are a lot of questions about real estate, and one of the most fascinating parts is the inspection, but there's also, the contract provisions. There's also broker's duties and obligations. There's also misrepresentations by sellers. I had a call yesterday on one. And you can listen to their show that follows our show, the Consumer Real Estate Show. Barry and Larry, very informative. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back. Welcome to all of our listeners. All of our listeners, KRDO in Colorado Springs, KEZZ 94.1 FM Steamboat Springs, KRAI Craig, Colorado, KHOW 630 AM right here in Denver. Join us live on our show right now is Eric from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are we doing today, guys?
Good. What's cooking?
All right, we are on that second week of those specials that I talked about last week. Now, that breakfast special is that corned beef hash that I talked about. You can get a one egg plate. You can get that corned beef hash on there. You can get a couple slabs of bacon, sausage patty, or half a ham steak on that with that. That's going to run all the way through next Friday, so that is our breakfast special for one more week in essence. And that lunch special is going to be that tiger shrimp burrito that we're doing there. We're going to grill those up, charbroil up some tiger shrimp, saute some peppers, some onions. We're going to load that up with beans and rice on the side. Of course, you can get that red or green chili right on top of that. Both of those are made right here in-house. Right on top of that as well, you can get the jalapeno ranch that we offer on the side. That's a good accompaniment with that. That gets lettuce, tomatoes, guacamole, sour cream. That will also run till next Friday. So make sure you make it in if you haven't already for those specials that are going to run out. We do switch those specials up every 2 weeks, so if you haven't made it in, come and check out one of those. And every Monday and Friday, we go every Monday and Friday with a early bird special. That is a 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. special. That is a breakfast plate for only $6.99. Again, you can get ham, bacon, or sausage with that. And that actually comes with toast, tortilla, or pancakes. Now, those pancakes are scratch-made. They are buttermilk-made. We make them right here on the premises. They are out of this world. I always recommend those. But any of those options are available to you. So come on down and check out all those things. Come on down and check out our patio. It's absolutely gorgeous Colorado weather right now. We got the umbrellas up. We got crafts of mimosas for $13.50. Those are absolutely out of this world right now. Tons of things going on, all kinds of flat screen, looking at the abs highlights, looking at nugget highlights, all kinds of things happening down at Caitlin's restaurant, guys.
I was going to ask you about that deck. How's the deck looking?
The deck is fabulous. You know, we power washed it down after that last storm. We've got the umbrellas up, all cleaned up, ready to go. It's a beautiful place. You can bring your dog out there. We're dog friendly here. You can bring those. You can come and hang out. Tons of things to offer, all kinds of things going on at Caitlin's Restaurant.
All right, Eric, where are you located?
Guys, that's going to be 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, guys, that is in the Glendale Shopping Center. That is one block east of Colorado. That is in the Glendale Shopping Center, guys. Come on down, check it out. You will love it every bite of the way.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, guys.
All right, you will love it every bite of the way. All right, Gary Bell, Bob Leonard, we're here for you. We can answer your questions. Our phone number right here in the studio is 303 713 8255, 713-8255. We're ready to go for you. And, you know, I was explaining earlier in the show, we invented this show years ago because we understood people didn't have the information they needed. You know, we're injury attorneys. So over the years, it dawned on Brad and I, people come in and they're being taken advantage of. They don't have a level playing field. The insurance company already did this or that or this or that. And we just got sick of it. So we thought, what does the public really need? We need information. And so we've dedicated our legal careers to giving you information. We do all kinds of radio shows. We've written 6 books. And if you come see us, we'll get a free initial consultation and a free legal game plan, right? So then this show was born years ago. People don't have the information they need in the community. Where do they go? So 303-713-8255. I'll tell you where you go. You go right here. And we're going to join Steve again. Steve, you still with us?
I'm still here. Oh, a sidebar. I've eaten at Caitlin's. I've had a couple of excellent experiences there. It's a nice layout.
Well, fantastic. We appreciate that comment. Okay, so you're talking about the General Sessions warrant. I mean, warrants, yeah. You know, and we're talking bench warrants. Yeah, you can be arrested years later. When the police pull you over, they always check for wants and warrants. So a General Sessions warrant, and you say the prosecutor or the attorney told you there's no limitation and it never expires. So
yeah,
are we answering your questions, or do you have more issues or questions?
What is the exception? I didn't know about this General Sessions, and it just popped up. Now, what had happened is my wife had passed away. They didn't know, but I still had, it happened on a Friday. I had to spend the weekend locked up, and then I had to post a bond. It messed up my entire schedule because I was a student at Metro State, and I missed, registering for my classes. So I don't know. Everything got dismissed after they read the autopsy.
Right.
She died in her sleep from natural causes, but this is something people have to be aware of. And my main question is, how do you check to see if you have outstanding General Sessions?
You know, active warrants are issued by the judge, and they're active. They do not expire. There's really no easy way to find out if you have a warrant for your arrest.
Okay.
In General Sessions, generally, it's something to do with violations of a city ordinance, of city and county. Denver's a city and a county. They have the city court, and they also have the county court, which are separate. General Sessions is the city court violations. It's a violation of a municipal ordinance in the city and county of Denver. Those warrants won't disappear. Judges will issue warrants for things like failure to appear. You know, if you go to court and you're supposed to appear for a hearing and you don't show up, they can issue a bench warrant for your failure to appear. Failure to respond to pay a traffic ticket. Making child support payments. But they never expire, and you won't really know if you have one until you probably get stopped by the police. If you have one, you can go to you can clear it, but you never want to go on a Friday because the courts are not working on Saturday or Sunday.
No, you go on a Friday, you're going to spend the weekend in the Crossbars Motel, right?
sort of like you did.
But you know, the default rule here, and the default legal rule, in my opinion, would be if you miss a court appearance. If you missed a court appearance, you've got to assume. Right? That there's a warrant. You've got to assume that there's a warrant because they're going to call the case and you're not going to show up. And more than likely, I mean, the court doesn't have to do it, but more than likely they issue a bench warrant, and that's what the police check when they pull you over, wants and warrants.
Right. And the thing was, I never knew. My wife didn't tell me that she had. I guess it was a third party that called the police and filed a complaint. Well, he didn't respond when we went to court. They couldn't find him, and of course, my wife had passed away. So this was like a literal rabbit out of the hat.
That's amazing. So you didn't have a court appearance. You don't go to the default position of assuming there's a warrant. You don't know anything about it.
No, it was in the end, it was the municipal violation.
Right.
You know, Gary, sometimes you could, let's say there's somebody get an altercation, a fight. The person can make a claim against you. You go to the police and file a claim against you later, and they'll issue a warrant for your arrest. You may not even know that the other person went to the police and asked.
Right, and you know, sometimes, and I think the police call it a pocket warrant. The detectives call it a pocket warrant. They call you up and say, "I've got a warrant here for you. Why don't you come on down? What do you think?
Right.
Yeah, right. Why don't you come on down and talk to us?"
That never happened either.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of implications in the criminal side of the criminal law on whether you should or should not talk to those people, especially without an attorney. But when they say, you know, we've got a bench warrant for your arrest, I'm holding it right here. That's why they call it a pocket warrant. Why don't you come on down to our station and talk to us? So you better understand your rights before you start motoring on down.
Right. That never happened. The procedure was way out of whack.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make you aware that, or make the general people know out there, just watch out for the GS, General Sessions warrant in Denver. Now, yeah, I'm interested in knowing about FedEx and UPS, and I'll let you guys continue because I've seen some crazy UPS drivers. They get in a hurry. So I'll let you guys go. Thank you very
much. Okay, no problem. Steve, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We appreciate your call. 303-713-8255. Brad Pollack is in jury trial in Denver. He finished his first week of the jury trial this week, and next week is the final week of the trial, so he's not here. Bob Leonard is filling in. Our law firm is Bell and Pollack. Joining us live right now on our show is Mike from Wheat Ridge. Good morning, Mike.
Oh, good morning. Yeah, I was watching on the television about Chelsea Manning having to go to jail because she wouldn't testify for the grand jury.
Right.
I was wondering why couldn't she go and then just say take the Fifth Amendment, or just say I don't recall.
Or say you don't recall. You know, there's some people that say when you say you don't recall, and you do know, there are certain people say that's perjury in and of itself because you're not telling what you do know. But uh-huh. So your question centers around being arrested because you don't show up or because you don't answer the question. Let me get your question clearer.
No, I was wondering why she didn't go and just say take the Fifth Amendment, or just say I don't recall. How can they prove that you do recall?
Right. So, you know, again, grand jury proceedings are a special proceeding. So, Mike, can you hang with us during the break and we'll catch you on the other side?
Oh, okay.
All right. I'm going to put you on hold, so don't go anywhere. We'll be glad to talk to you and answer your question, all right?
Okay.
All right. You're listening to the Bell and Pollack Legal Show. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard, Brad Pollack's in a jury trial in Durango. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Right? We have our books here. I'm going to talk to you right now about our book on hit and run. We call it Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. You can't make any assumptions. You have to know what you're doing in a hit and run. Sometimes you're on the way to the hospital in the ambulance and you can't do some of these things. But sometimes you're not. And sometimes the people leave. And it's usually in the dead of night. And they kill people and maim people and the cowards leave. And when they leave and they injure somebody, that's a felony. And those detectives take it seriously. And you have civil liability claims, and we wrote a book on it. You go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Get the book free. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Here we go. Grab your legal coffee, legal bagel. We're ready to rock and roll on law. This is a law talk show, not a political show. We've done it for years. 303-713-8255. 713-8255. Right before the break, we were talking to Mike. You still with us, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. Grand jury question. Chelsea Hamilton released all those documents to WikiLeaks, right? Went into solitary confinement.
Uh-huh.
Can you go in front of a grand jury and invoke the Fifth Amendment privilege?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes. What does that mean? And so so you have to get down to it, because let's just give a couple of examples. You go into in front of a grand jury and they ask you a question and you say, invoke the Fifth Amendment, I'm not answering any questions. None. Zero. You're not going to even say what your name is. So the when you invoke the Fifth Amendment, it has to be applicable and has to apply to the specific question. Right? And so, yes, you can use the Fifth Amendment. It still applies. You don't have to incriminate yourself. And then there's also what I call the derivative rule. Maybe you didn't commit the crime, but maybe something can be used out of your statement, your testimony, to investigate and find out that you committed the crime or a crime or a series of crimes. And so the Fifth Amendment is good in front of the grand jury. So is that answering that part of the question, Mike?
Yeah. I was just curious. I don't know. I was wondering why she didn't do that.
Right. Well, I think she just refused to testify, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, so that's different, right? I mean, so
yeah, right.
there's direct contempt of court and indirect contempt of court. Direct contempt of court is right in front of the judge, right in front of the court, right?
Okay.
Indirect contempt of court is they order you to do something, you leave, and you don't do it. That's outside the confines of the courtroom. Do they have the power to punish direct contempt of court? You bet, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so, you know, I'll give you an example. I was in a trial in federal court, and the attorneys showed up 5 minutes late for the lunch break. Fined $50 right there, the attorney. That's a smaller version, but yes, you can be held in direct contempt of court. So she was going to refuse to testify, as I understand the facts. She didn't say, I invoked the Fifth Amendment. She said, I'm just not going to answer your questions, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So if you're not,
That's why I was wondering if she could have.
Well, that's a great question, Mike, because let's say, okay, you're going to go to jail then. I'm the judge, you're going to go to jail. And, the general traditional legal rule was you have the key to your own jail cell. Well, what do you mean I have the key? Well, when you decide to testify, you can come over here and testify. You might get out. That's how you have the key. But until you invoke some privilege or follow the procedure legally, you're not going to come in this courtroom or this grand jury proceeding and just say, I'm not going to testify. What's the legal basis for that? Am I making sense to you, Mike?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, yeah, and I think she was in solitary confinement for 28 days, something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
right.
She has to have the privilege, Gary. She just can't say, I'm not going to answer the question because I'm playing the fifth. She has to have her own privilege. She has to something that she's trying to protect herself from self-incrimination.
Right. There's also a whole series of cases in law on Fifth Amendment privilege, or whether you have a selective Fifth Amendment privilege, meaning I want to refuse to answer this question. I'll answer this question, but I don't want to answer this question. So you select the questions that you don't want to answer. Some states have the selective. Some states you have a broader, broad-based Fifth Amendment privilege. I'm not going to testify because I exercise the Fifth Amendment. And what does the Fifth Amendment say? You don't have to testify into matters that would incriminate yourself, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so and that's the way I see it. Do you have any other issues or questions, Mike? That was a very fascinating question.
I see in Washington frequently they say, "Oh, I don't recall," it's not to my recollection. I remember that. Or
yeah. So yeah, and I don't recall. And there are many many legal scholars and people in authority that say when you don't recall but you really do recall, then that's a form of perjury. And some people say it's not, but I think the majority view is it's a form of perjury when you know the answer. And so when you say, I don't recall, that's a false answer. And so that is a form of perjury. But I guess if you don't really recall it and proof requirements, Mike, how do you really prove that of a person, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a bigger issue, and that's why they usually get away with it.
Wow.
All right.
Okay. Oh, wow. Thank you.
Mike, thank you for calling the Bell and Pollock Legal Show and listening to our show, sir.
Oh, you bet.
All right. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. We're here to serve you. We created this show years ago to give you information, to give you the places to go. And by the way, we send you to some other attorney. We don't get paid for that. It's free. We don't have a referral service. We just do it for you. 303-713-8255. Join us now is Miss Williams. Miss Williams from Colorado Springs. Did I say that right?
Yes, sir.
Well, ma'am, what can we do for you?
I understand that in the state of Colorado that you cannot receive a Section 8 housing from a relative or the relative owns the house. And my sister got Section 8 on a house that belonged to her mother, our mother.
Okay, so your question
is there a limitation of contacting the state to let them know that she illegally received Section 8 for that house?
No, I don't think there's a limitation of you contacting the government to tell them that in essence this doesn't qualify. It
right.
might be something worse than that, other than not qualifying. That was a polite way to put it, right? But, yeah, I don't think there's any limitation. I think you can do it. Were you thinking about doing this?
Yes, because after she received the Section 8 housing, she went to our mother and talked her into quit claiming the house over to her when she well, she's 91 years old, and she was in extremely poor health, and she just gave her the house.
Okay, and is your mother still around with us today?
Yes.
Okay, I'm thankful for that. So listen, there's a whole body of law on elder abuse and taking advantage of elderly people. And, you know, a classic example is somebody's close to an elderly person, a mother, a father. They're close, and then they get them to deed property to them or transfer property to them. There are all kinds of remedies that can be exercised for that, Ms. Williams.
Well, sir, I went to the police, and they sent out a detective to talk to her, and they said that they found her at sound mind, that she just gave it away. And I said, no. 90-year-old ladies just don't get up one day and decide to give their house away. She was in poor health. And anyways, they said that I didn't have a case, that they found her sound mind.
Wouldn't that really be a civil action?
Right. Well, Ms. Williams, I don't care what the detective said, there wouldn't be a case. There probably would be a case, just like you just said, 90 years old, somebody takes advantage of them, correct?
Yes, correct.
Right, and so the detectives are looking for a criminal-type enterprise or criminal-type situation. That's different than a civil court to set aside the deed. I mean, it can be done, right?
You know, Gary, she needs to be speaking to an elder law attorney, I would think.
Right. I tell you what I'm going to do, Ms. Williams. I'm going to put you on hold. Give your name and information to Kevin, and we will refer you to an elder law attorney and get some more specific help, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Ma'am, thank you for the call. Don't go away. Give Kevin your information.
Okay.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We love doing the show for you, right? Don't forget, every Saturday, 10 to 11, our Champions of the People Injury Show. Today we're talking about truck accidents. It's a specialty field. It's replete with thousands of rules and regulations. The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Rules and Regulations, they have to comply with them. If you're talking about a big rig or a commercial truck or a smaller truck and you've been injured, you can call us anytime. Our website, championsofthepeople.com, you get a free initial consultation and a free legal game plan, because we are your champions of the people. See you next week.